Well, now, please. So we come to Genesis chapter 11. Now, as most of you know, we are giving studies in the life of Abraham. Last night we dealt with the New Testament commentary on most of his life, walking by faith. Tonight we deal with Abraham and Lot. Tomorrow evening we shall deal with a day with God. And then in Westerontle Hall on Lord's Day at 3 o'clock, the final address, the subject, Abraham offering up Isaac. Then in Rexdale Hall here on Lord's Day evening, the subject will be After Christ Comes. Then Monday evening will find us at 8 o'clock in the Will of the Lord in Brock Avenue. Tuesday in West Toronto, and the final meeting here next Wednesday at 8 o'clock. Now we'll value your prayers for the meeting. And although we've had quite a difficulty tonight, please don't stay away tomorrow night. Do come along. We'll see what more we can do about housing the folks. We are delighted to see you. May the Lord bless you. Now, please, Genesis chapter 11, verse 26. And Terah lived 70 years, and begat Abram, Nahor, and Haran. Now, please, when you read that, please don't think that they were all born in the 1 year. For they weren't. Like other things, you oftentimes find a text in the Hebrew, and it gives you the whole story shortly, and then expands. For instance, just to prove what I'm saying to you, if you look at verse 28, Haran died before his father Terah in the land of his nativity and out of the Chaldees. So the possibility is that he was the oldest. According to the close of verse 27, Lot was the son of Haran. If you read the rest of the verses carefully, you would find that Nahor never left out of the Chaldees. Now please, verse 32. The days of Terah were 205 years, and Terah died in Haran. He died when he was 205. Look, please, at the middle of verse 4 of chapter 12. Abraham was 75 years old when he departed out of Haran. So if he was 75 and Terah was 205 when he died in Haran, then Abraham, 75 years off 205, meant that Terah was 130 when Abram was born. So the oldest son was born when Terah was 70, 60 years later before Abram came on the scene. Now, that's just by the way. That's one of chapter 12. Now the Lord had said unto Abram, get thee out of thy country and from thy kindred and from thy father's house unto a land that I will show thee. And I will make of thee a great nation. And I will bless thee, and make thy name great. And I will bless them that bless thee, and curse him that curseth thee. And in thee shall all the families of the earth be blessed. So Abram departed as the Lord had spoken unto him, and Lot went with him. Verse 5, and Abram took Sarai his wife, and Lot his brother's son. Verse 8, Abram removed from thence unto a mountain on the east of Bethel, and pitched his tent, having Bethel on the west, and Ai on the east. There he builded an altar unto the Lord, and called upon the name of the Lord. And Abram journeyed, going on still toward the south. And there was a famine in the land, and Abram went down into Egypt to sojourn there, for the famine was grievous in the land. It came to pass, when he was come near to enter into Egypt, that he said unto Sarai his wife, behold, now I know that thou art a fair woman to look upon. Therefore it shall come to pass, when the Egyptians shall see thee, that they shall say, this is his wife. And they will kill me, but they will save thee alive. Say, I pray thee, thou art my sister, that it may be well with me for thy sake, and my soul shall live because of thee. Verse 20. Pharaoh commanded his men concerning Abram, and they sent Abram away and his wife, and all that he had. Abram went up out of Egypt, he and his wife and all that he had, and Lot with him, into the south. Abram was very rich in cattle, in silver, and in gold. And he went on his journeys from the south, even to Bethel, unto the place where his tent had been at the beginning, between Bethel and Hai, unto the place of the altar which he had made there at the first. And there Abram called on the name of the Lord. Lot also which went with Abram had flocks, and herds, and tents. The land was not able to bear them that they might dwell together, for their substance was great, so that they could not dwell together. There was a strife between the herdmen of Abram's cattle and the herdmen of Lot's cattle. The Canaanite and the Perizzite dwelled then in the land. Abram said unto Lot, Let there be no strife, I pray thee, between me and thee, between my herdmen and thy herdmen, for we be brethren. Is not the whole land before thee? Separate thyself, I pray thee, from me. If thou wilt take the left hand, then I will go to the right. Or if thou depart to the right hand, then I will go to the left. Lot lifted up his eyes and beheld all the plain of Jordan, that it was well watered everywhere, before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, even as the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt, as thou comest unto Zoar. Then Lot chose him all the plain of Jordan, and Lot journeyed east, and they separated themselves the one from the other. Abram dwelled in the land of Canaan, Lot dwelled in the cities of the plain, and pitched his tent toward Sodom. But the men of Sodom were wicked, and sinners before the Lord exceedingly. Verse 18. Then Abram removed his tent, and came and dwelt in the plain of Mamre, which is in Hebron, and built there an altar unto the Lord. Verse 12 of chapter 14. And they took Lot, Abram's brother's son, who dwelt in Sodom, and his goods, and departed. Verse 1 of chapter 19. There came two angels to Sodom at even, and Lot sat in the gate of Sodom. Verse 30. And Lot went up out of Zoar, dwelt in the mountain, and his two daughters with him, for he feared to dwell in Zoar, and he dwelt in a cave, he and his two daughters. And I hope you know the rest of the story, please. May the Lord bless you as his word. Rex Dale found out last night I was a dry speaker. Lot's star rose in Ur of the Chaldees, and set in a little cave yonder with his two daughters just above Zoar. His name means hidden or concealed, for he never came out into the open, never made a full confession as did Abraham, never lived the life of separation that Abraham lived, and ultimately he finished his life as far as the scriptures are concerned in Zoar, and you know the horrible story of his two daughters becoming mothers to his children. It's strange, brethren and sisters, that you never read that Lot died. He had died years before for the purpose of God. Brethren and sisters, there are some men, and it would have been better by far that God had taken them to heaven when they were converted. For they have lived to bring shame upon the fair name of Christ. Better
if they had never lived. Reading the sacred record, you would never have believed from the Old Testament that Lot was a man that knew God or was converted. It takes Peter to tell us that God delivered just Lot, vexed with the filthy manner of life of the wicked. For that righteous man, dwelling among them in seeing and in hearing, vexed his righteous soul every day with their unlawful deeds. It all began yonder in Ur of the Chaldees, to use the language of Stephen. Men, brethren, and fathers, hearken. The God of glory appeared unto our father Abraham. Will you note a number of things, please? The God of glory appeared. Now, you'll only find that title once more in the book. You'll find it in Psalm 29, the God of glory thunder. You'll find kindred titles. For instance, you'll find the King of Glory in Psalm 24. You'll find the Lord of glory in 1 Corinthians 2. You'll find the Father of glory in Ephesians 1. But here the God of glory appears and turned the glory of Ur of the Chaldees into ashes. Henceforth it hath no glory by reason of the glory that excelleth. The God of glory appears. Stop. That's the first appearance of God since Eden. Isn't that right? As far as we know, he never appeared to Enoch. As far as we know, he never appeared to Noah. But here's a new beginning. It's the third beginning. The first is in Adam. The second is after the flood in Noah. The third is in Abraham. The God of glory appeared unto our father Abraham. Get thee out from thy country, from thy kindred, and from thy father's house. Yes? And as we saw last night, Hebrews 11 views things from the divine side. Abram gets credit for going out in Hebrews 11. But he didn't go out fully. Isn't that right? He left his country. He left his kindred, but not his father's house. And they stop yonder at Haran. And they remain there for quite a time until Terah dies. Now, of course, it's perfectly understandable, isn't it? You can visualize the scene. The God of glory appears and reveals himself to Abraham. Obviously, Lot is associated, so is Sarai, and so is Terah, his father. After all, why shouldn't they leave and go with him? Perfectly natural, isn't it? And obviously, Father Terah took command of the situation and made them stop halfway to the land at Haran. And there they remain till Terah dies. You see, brethren, that's the power of natural affection. It's one of the strongest things in the world, but sometimes one of the biggest barriers. That's why your Lord and mine taught a man's foes can be they of his own household. Now let me say this before I pass on. Abram never get clear of it till Terah dies. Now in the New Testament, it doesn't happen like that to liberate you. For in the New Testament, nothing ever dies to you. Isn't that right? Isn't that right? The world never dies to you. Sin never dies to you. The flesh never dies to you. The law never dies to you. Nothing dies! Then what's the secret of living? This, brethren, that you learn to die to these things. That's the secret. Now what's the law of compensation working? For, brethren, no person ever left all for Christ. But what their compensation? Do you remember Peter said it, didn't he? Lord, we have left all and followed thee. Peter, no man ever left, but he received 100-fold. Thus, God says, get thee out of thy country, I will make thee unto a land that I will show thee. And God said to him this, Abraham, you give up your country, and I'll show you a land. Abram, you give up your kindred, and I will make thy name great. Abram, you give up your father's house, you'll be a blessing to all. The law of compensation worked, and Abraham went out, as we saw last night, not knowing whither he went. Thank God he knew who he was going with. Now watch. He reaches the land. And we are told that he came yonder and he pitched his tent with Bethel there and Ai there. Isn't that right? Bethel is the house of God. Ai means ruins. For the believer pitches his tent and takes his stand in connection with the house of God, Bethel. And he stands in relation to a world that is doomed and under judgment, Ai. And yonder Abram pitched his tent, built his altar, and called upon the name of the Lord. He pitched his tent, for he was a pilgrim. He built his altar, for he was a priest. He called upon the name of the Lord, for he was a man who depended upon his God. He built his tent, for he's a pilgrim, confessed. He doesn't belong there. He's moving on. Thus, brethren, here we have no continuing city, but we seek one to come. Secondly, he would build his altar. Thereby he told all who had eyes to see that he believed that the God that he worshipped was approached on the ground of sacrifice. He built his altar in order to tell all and sundry that he was a worshipper of the true God. He believed that there was that which a man could give to his God. Do you believe that? Great weakness amongst us today, brethren. One of our basic weaknesses is this, that we have come to believe and act as though what is Levitical is greater than what is priestly. You say, what do you mean? I mean this. That we have come to believe and act as though service toward God was greater, toward men was greater than service toward God. Isn't that right? Just you approach some brethren with a diary. Oh yes, they'll come and preach. When did the last take part in the morning meeting or in the prayer meeting? You see, brethren, what is Levitical has become greater in our eyes than what is priestly. Last of all, he called upon the name of the Lord, for he was a man who walked and moved in dependence upon his God. Now watch, please, I'm down at verse 9, very important. Chapter 12, verse 9, Abram journeyed on, going still toward the south, and according to verse 10, he was in the south land when the famine came. Isn't that right? He was near Egypt. You see, the devil will either stop you going too far or make you go too far. You got that? He stopped him at Haran. And then when Abram moved on to the land, right to Bethel, he gone to move beyond Bethel. So that when the famine came, Abram is near to Egypt. Isn't that right? Now look again at verse 9, will you please? Will you notice that he's in the south country? Isn't that right? Where's the south land, brethren? It lies between Bethel and Egypt. Isn't that right? It lies between the house of God and Egypt, the world. Now this is the first mention of Egypt in the Bible, and it's a menace. It's always been a menace. Isn't that right? So Abram's dwelling in the south land, near enough to be associated with Bethel, but near enough to be trapped in Egypt. Tell me, come on, brethren, where are you dwelling? In the south land? You're a Christian? Oh, yes. Just enough of a Christian to be associated with Bethel and the meeting? But not enough of a Christian to be associated with the world? So that the folks in the meeting look upon you as a Christian? The folks of the world, you're not too much of a Christian to cause any difficulty down there. Come on, brethren, that's the South Country. The South Country is the place of compromise. The South Country is the place where you're a Christian and yet you're not. The The South Country is a place where you dwell, where you can attend a meeting. Break bread, maybe. And enjoy the things of the world in your home or elsewhere. That's the South Country. You listening, brother and sister? Oh, you say you're saved. Is that right? Maybe you've never even been baptized or associated with a meeting, but you say you're saved. Are you in the world going on with the things of the world? South Country. When the famine came, where do people in the South Country go when trouble comes? They go into the world. Now you mark my words, brother. Now, in God's name, listen to me. The South Country is a place of danger. In the South Country, you're respectable enough to still be associated with the Christians. But in the South Country, you're in the borderland of Egypt and can enjoy the things of the world. Come on, brethren. Come on, sisters. Do you see the significance of all this? Now watch. When the famine came, he went down to Egypt. Doesn't stop to consider the implications. Doesn't seek guidance. He just goes down. It was the easiest thing to do. Now you young folks, listen to me. For I don't know, but what, there's maybe a lot of you tampering secretly with the world, and if your parents knew about it, they'd be shocked. Now mark what I'm saying. Mind you, there's folks like you have gone this way before. And they've spent a long time down yonder, and when it was too late, they realized they'd made a big mistake. Now I want you to notice. In verse 10, his faith failed. Isn't that right? His faith failed. Think of it. Here was a man that had faith to leave his own country and his kindred and his father's house and go out after God. Yet he hadn't faith to trust God when the famine came. Isn't that right? Now watch. If in verse 10 his faith failed, in verse 11 his courage failed. Isn't that right? And as the shadow of Egypt fell across his path, he turns to Syria and he says, now you're beautiful to look upon. They'll covet you. Sarah, say you're my sister. Now it was half a truth, for she was his half-sister. Are you listening to me? It was only half the truth. It wasn't a lie, it was half a lie. For when he said she was my sister, he was right, she was related to him. But she was more than his sister, she was his wife. Now listen very carefully to this, will you please? In the scriptures, the man speaks of the elect, the believer, whether faithful or unfaithful. Have you got that? The man speaks of the believer, whether faithful or unfaithful. The woman speaks of the principles that the man stands associated with. Have you got that now? The man is the believer. The woman stands for the principles he's associated with. Now watch this working out. Abram is a man of faith called out by God. Isn't that right? Good. What does Sarah speak of? According to Galatians 4, isn't this right now? You read it. Sarah represents the Jerusalem above, the heavenly system of grace. Isn't that right? She stands in contrast to Hagar. So that Sarah represents the principles of grace that the man of faith stands associated with. In other words, Abraham goes into the world as a man professing to have faith in God, and he denies his relationship with the God of grace, or if you like, spiritually, with Christ. One of the first things that you can know whether you're in the place where you ought to be or not is this. Can you confess Christ there? Now, if your lips are sealed, you're in the wrong place. You should never be there. See the danger? The first thing that the shadow of Egypt does is this. You lose your courage. You fail to confess God in Christ. Ah, brethren, listen. You read it. Here's what he's saying down at verses 13 and so on. Say thou at my sister that it may be well with me and my soul shall live. Isn't that right? And down he goes and Pharaoh takes Sarah into the harem. Isn't that right? And he showers his presence upon Abraham. Brethren, I wonder how he felt in the tent these nights. Eh? With all the gifts from Pharaoh. Sarah up in the harem. Eh? Wonder how he felt. Oh, brethren. How small big men can be. Eh? How weak strong men can be. He sacrificed her for himself. And if God hadn't intervened, as he did again. For mind you, when I'm talking to you, you would have thought he'd have learned the lesson, wouldn't you? You know, brethren, he did the very same in chapter 20. Did the very same. Now, you don't realize how strong the fool is. Isn't that right? You don't realize how strong the fool is. Brethren and sisters, the world is a great fool. Isn't that right? Demas went down and never came back, as far as we know. It was a big test for him. The food test is always a big test. Genesis 12, there's a famine in the land and Abram went down to Egypt. Isn't that right? Genesis 26, there's a famine and Isaac went down to Gerar. Ruth 1, there's a famine and Elimelech went down to Moab. Three men you never would have thought would have got tripped up. Makes you think, doesn't it? But if God hadn't plagued them out of Egypt, he might have been there yet. God plagued Pharaoh's house to get him out. Imagine other people suffering because you are, when you shouldn't be. Eh? Abram had to slink out of Egypt, reproached by a man of the world. Now, at the beginning of chapter 13, please, you can drop your eye, will you? Abram went up out of Egypt, isn't that right? Now look at verse 3. Lift your heart to God as you read it. He went on his journeys from the south even to Bethel. He's coming back from Egypt, brethren, but he moves right through the south country. He doesn't stop this time. Right back to Bethel. If you're going to be anything from God, you'll need to do the same. Get out of it and get back to the house of God and get amongst the people of God. But you have no right to be away from them. Fellowship is vital and essential. God never intended a man to act on his own or to live on his own. Away from the people of God. You'll be a far better man and woman for God amongst the people of God than you'll be separating yourself from them. Now watch. When he comes up out now, please, verse 7, there's a strife between them. What's wrong? Verse 6, there's the trouble. They're both wealthy. First mention of riches in the book, the source of trouble. Isn't that right? Brethren, he brought two things out of Egypt that were a source of trouble. Isn't that right? He came up a wealthy man. That caused trouble with Lot. Are you listening? It was out of Egypt he got Hagar. Isn't that right? From Hagar came Ishmael and from Ishmael came the Muslims. Isn't that right? One day Sarah says, away you go and take Hagar. And Hagar went into Abram's tent and became the mother of his child. Brethren, today, there are 300 or so millions of Muslims standing in serried ranks of opposition to the gospel of God. Is that right? Ask any Muslim missionary.
We all spring from one man's weakness and attempt. You remember on the other side I showed how the hosts of Israel came from Abram and Sarah when Isaac was produced? Either way, you can't account for the ultimate issue one way or the other. Think of it. The first source of trouble in the land was money. Achan. Is that right? The first source of trouble in the church was money. Acts 6. Nothing wrong with money, brethren. Nothing wrong with having wealth. As long as you get it honestly. As long as you don't get it in an unequal yoke in business. As long as you hold that it belongs to God and hold fast your stewardship in relation to God, and you'll be all right. Isn't that right? For brethren, there's a burden of care in getting it. There's a burden of anxiety in keeping it. There's a burden of temptation in using it. There's a burden of guilt in abusing it. And there's a burden of responsibility in giving account for it. Isn't that right? And an awful burden of sorrow if you lose it. So hold it for God. You'll be all right. There's strife between them. The Canaanite and the Perizzite are watching them fighting. Are you listening, brethren? Are you listening? Don't you think that you can fall out with your brethren and divide and the world doesn't know about it? Bring reproach and testimony upon the God of peace. Watch how Abram met it. Now he said, listen, Lot, there need be no difficulty in this matter. He said, I tell you what to do, Lot. He says, look out, there's the whole land before you. If you go that way, I'll go this way. And if you go this way, I'll go that way. He met the spirit of strife with the spirit of surrender. Isn't that right? What? 2 Timothy 2 says, the servant of the Lord must not strive. Isn't that right? The Epistle of James says that the wisdom that cometh from above is peaceable. Philippians 4 says, let your yieldingness be known unto all. Psalm 47 says, the Lord shall choose our inheritance for us. Brethren, you can't fight with a man that refuses to assert his rights, that's prepared to be defrauded and suffer wrong. Isn't that right? No, we're 1 Corinthians 6 teaches. Suffer yourself to be defrauded, brethren, rather than assert your rights. Abram could have asserted his rights, his natural right as the elder, isn't that right? His tribal right as chieftain, his spiritual right as inheritor. Brethren, he surrendered them all and allowed a less spiritual, younger and weaker man to make the choice. Would you? Would you? Would you have allowed a younger, less spiritual and weaker man to make the choice? Lot lifted up his eyes. Isn't that right? Well, you drop your eyes to verse 10, will you? And as he looked over it, he saw it was like what? It was like the land of Egypt. I want you to notice something, please. He went down to Egypt. Isn't that right? They came back up out of Egypt. Abram took him down and Abram brought him up. But brethren, it's one thing to take a man into Egypt. It's another thing to take the love of Egypt out of his heart. You Christians, maybe some of you, and you're encouraging others to go in for the things of the world. Is that right? It's one thing to take them into the world. It's another thing to take the love of the world out of their heart. And the love of the world never left Lot's heart. Isn't that right? You know, brethren and sisters, you never forget it. I wasn't reared in a Christian home. I was 19 before I was converted.
I wish to God many a time I'd never been in some places. For you never forget. In moments of weakness, you militate that way.
Israel knew about it, didn't they? The generation that came up out of Egypt said, we remember the fish we did eat freely in Egypt, the cucumber, the melon, the leek, the onion and the garlic, things of a strong smell, a stench, brethren, that never leaves your nostrils.
Lot never forgot it. Never forgot it.
And it says that he lifted up his eyes, isn't that right? He chose, he journeyed, he separated, he dwelt, he sat as a magistrate. See the red light flashing? And he took his step. It's always like that, isn't it? It says of Eve that she saw, she took, she ate, she gave. Isn't that right? It says of Achan that he saw, he coveted, he took, he hid. Isn't that right? See the red light flashing? It says of Peter that he slept, that he followed afar off, that he warmed himself at the fire, that he denied his Lord. And the red lights are flashing. For you never go back to the world without God warning you of the consequences. Think of it, brethren. They parted company because they couldn't agree about their wealth. Isn't that right? Listen. Now I'll put it in your language as I near the end. The friendship of Abraham and the orphan boy, Lot, it withstood the break with her of the Chaldees. Isn't that right? It withstood the delay at Haran. It withstood the famine in the land. It withstood the disgrace in Egypt, but it could not withstand the pressure of riches. The friendship broke upon the altar of the dollar.
Lot asked the question, what does it profit a man? And they come up with the wrong answer. Well, I'll repeat it. Lot asked the question, what does it profit a man? And they come up with the wrong answer.
They got what he wanted, and they lost all. Brethren, it's possible to save your life and lose it. Possible to gain all that you want of this world and of nothing for the next. Isn't that right? Well, Mike, remember last night I asked one or two questions. What's your ambition, brother? To be an elder or a director? Eh? Talked to you about your families, didn't I? I think I asked you the question, what would you like to see performed first, their baptism or their graduation? Oh, brethren and sisters, what world are we living for and holding our families for? Lot had everything. He saw the well-watered plain, that it was like Egypt. Oh, providentially, it seemed it was a godsend to him. It was wrong. It was wrong.
From that moment, his star started to descend and went down, vanished at Zoar. Bad enough, but there's worse to come. It must be hot out here. Open a window if you want, brethren. There's worse to come. It's bad enough, but there's worse to come. Now watch.
It says that he dwelled in the land of, Abram dwelt in the land of Canaan, and Lot dwelt in the cities of the plain, and he pitched his tent right against Sodom. Verse 13 says that the men of Sodom were wicked and sinners before the Lord exceedingly, and that should have been enough to stop them. Now you might say to me, maybe he didn't know.
Ah, brother Abram knew. He stayed out of it. Isn't that right?
Brethren, the moral issue, the moral conduct was enough to tell him, don't go near it. You listening, brethren? Sodom's worse than Egypt.
Now, in my young days, I got a lot of good teaching, I think. I'll leave you to judge it. I wonder if you get teaching like this. Have you ever been taught about the Egypt world? Have you ever been taught about the Sodom world? Have you ever been taught about the Babylonish world? The Egypt world is the world of pleasure. The pleasures of sin for a season. The Sodom world is the world of sex. Without love, that's screaming to you from all your hoardings. The Babylonish world is religion without Christ and without a cross and without blood. That today is pinpointed in the World Council of Churches and will find its end in the Babylon of the Book of the Revelation, that God cries, come out of her, my people, come out. He pitches his tent towards Sodom. Chapter 14, verse 12, he's in Sodom. Chapter 19, verse 1, he's a magistrate in Sodom. A leading light. Just before, at verse 12, when God says he pitched his tent towards Sodom, the beginning of 12, Abram dwelled in the land. And we're taught from verse 14 on that the Lord appeared to Abraham. The old man is turned, so to speak, and he's walking up the hillside. Still looks as if he's got the worst of the bargain, has Abraham. Isn't that right? Lot has chosen everything that's favourable. As the old man goes up the bare hillside, God spoke to him. Abram, he says, will you lift up your eyes and look toward the north, the south, the east, and the west? Abram, all that you see, I'll give to you and to your seed. Isn't that right? So Abram removed his tent and he dwelt in the plain of Mamre, which means vigor, fatness, fruitfulness. Isn't that right? Which is in Hebron, which means fellowship. Now watch. When he left out of the Chaldees, he burned his boats as far as the world was concerned. You listening? But the next challenge is nearer. What's that? Separate from Lot. For if you're going to be anything for God, you'll need to separate from worldly Christians. Come on. Come on now. You'll need to separate from worldly Christians. If you're going to be anything for God. As he goes up the bare hillside, God gives him his promise. Quite content with the richness of divine promise, he dwelt in Hebron, the place of fellowship, amongst the people of God, so to speak. That's it, brethren. That's it. Let us renounce every carnal ambition to be something in this world. Let us be happy and content to be pilgrims and strangers, finding our joy in God and our happiness amongst God's people. For brethren, be what they may, they're the finest in the world. Never speak ill of them. For the same grace saved them as saved you, and the same blood cleansed them as cleansed you. And I judge a person's spirituality by how they speak about Christians, whether they meet with us or not. God has taught me that they're the excellent in the earth. I may not feel free on many counts, brethren, to have fellowship with them. On the other hand, they don't feel free, many of them, to have fellowship with me. But, brethren, they're God's. Many a time I bow my knee to ask God's blessing and guidance to them. Ah, but you've landed in Sodom. Isn't that right? We're at chapter 19 now. He's sitting in the gate. Two angels appear at the door. Isn't that right? Mind you, give him credit. He invited them into his house. You notice the close of verse 2. Strange, isn't it? No, they say, Lot, we'd rather not go into your house. If you don't mind, Lot, we'll stay outside in the street.
ultimately test they went in. But they weren't too happy about it. Eh? I say, what kind of home have you got? Tell me, the angels are interested, you know.
I want you to notice something. I want you to notice that Abram got a visitation from the Lord in chapter 18, but Lot only got the ministry of angels.
The Lord didn't go down to Sodom. Brethren, he had no intentions of going.
Let me say to you what I said elsewhere. I can't remember where it was. The young sister was coming out the shows. Are you listening? She ran full tilt into the brother. Never mind who he was. A second or two and she regained her composure. Says, you know, Mr. So-and-so, I can take the Lord to the shows with me. Oh.
And when did the Lord become your property to take him anywhere? Huh?
Listen, brethren and sisters, you can't take him to these places for he doesn't go. Don't you forget it. You're on your own. And the Lord didn't go down to Sodom. If you're here tomorrow night, we'll see that. Now watch.
The men of Sodom surround the house. They're wanting the men that came in. Now you can read for yourself his filthy suggestion about his daughters. You've probably read it before. Isn't that right? Then the angel says, now listen, Lot, if you've got anybody here, get them out. Isn't that right? Verse 12. Hast thou here any besides sons-in-law and thy daughters? Whatsoever thou hast in the city, get them out! For the Lord will destroy this place. Now I'll take it as it stands here. Isn't that right? Now, first of all, where did he get his wife? I don't think he had her before he left out of the Chaldees for it. Doesn't say anything about her. Isn't that right? So that means he either got her in Haran, he either got her in Egypt, or in Sodom. Isn't that right? Where did you get yours? Eh? Come on now, you young folks that are going in for the things of the world. You want a wife out of the world? Well, come on.
Now, you make sure that you get your wife amongst the lost people. Now, you've all heard me before. It's not enough to marry a Christian. It's not enough to marry somebody in the meeting. It's only enough when you marry the man that God wants you to marry or the woman. If you're a wise young man or a young woman, you spend time in prayer over this matter, that God may overrule to bring you to the girl and the man. Enough to say this, that although angels tried to get her out, she persisted in turning round, for her heart lay in Sodom and Sodom's world. Isn't that right? Well, what about Lot himself? Well, the book says he vexed his righteous soul every day. Brethren, he hadn't a happy day, for the day he went into Sodom, the day that God took him out. He vexed his righteous soul from day to day, every day. Makes you think, doesn't it? Well, surely, in God's name, you would rather learn by precept than by experience, wouldn't you? Eh? Brethren, as I come from the presence of God to you, don't think anything about me, please. But be thankful in God's name that you've been taught these things. Many a family had he? Huh? Well now, drop your eye to verse 12. We'll just take it as it is here. The angels mention sons, so if he had any, if that's right, if there were sons, there were more than one, so we'll give him credit for two. Isn't that right? He spoke to his sons-in-law which married his daughters according to this version, so that would give him other two daughters married, that's four. And there were two girls came out of Sodom with him, so that's six. Isn't that right? Now watch. Now you parents listen to me, will you? When the cry came to get them out of Sodom, did you notice, please, that he never appealed to his sons once? Not once! Is that right? You read it for yourself. And if he had two sons, were they such sodomites? You know where we get the word sodomite from. This is it, it's from here. Were they such sodomites that he didn't feel it was worth his while talking to them? Eh? Oh, brethren and sisters, listen to me, please. Don't go in for the things of the world. That's what it produces in your family. Yet a lot of you are providing these things in your own home for the entertainment of your families. It's a tragedy. They're learning about the world in their father's house. So ultimately he went out with two young women, his two daughters, right up to the cave. When you read the beginning of the chapter, you're appalled at his suggestion to give the young women to the men outside. Isn't that right? Can you little wonder, if that's what he thought of them, and if he had reared them in Sodom, that they had no difficulty about seducing their father in the cave? Mind you, to his credit, they had to make him drunk to do it, but they did it. Some of you folks think I'm too serious, probably. Eh? And I warn you in God's name, see the result. Now, just a minute. He's up yonder in the cave, and he's lost his wife, and he's lost 2/3 of his family, and he's lost everything that he chose. And he's nothing. Nothing but a cave and 2 daughters that became the mothers to his children. Moab and Ammon that were implacable enemies of God right through. Isn't that right? Read your Bibles. It would well nigh break your heart. You'll understand now, brethren and sisters, why I said it's never recorded that he died. He died yonder. He died yonder. He died to everything of God. Brethren, he knew he was wrong to be there, but he hadn't the power to extricate himself. That was the trouble. Isn't that right? That's what it says. That righteous man, vexing in seeing and hearing. Seeing and hearing. Isn't that right? In seeing and hearing. He vexed his righteous soul every day with their unlawful deeds. Brethren and sisters, they hadn't a moment's happiness from the day he entered it to the day God took him out of it. And when God took him out of it, he had produced such fruit in it that it was only to his shame and condemnation. Now I want to ask you a question. Whether you're young or old, I want you to answer it honestly in the presence of your God tonight. Tell me, are you really happy with your Christian life? Now be honest. Are you really happy? Eh? Now, at the moment, please don't take offence. I'm not interested in the type of meeting you're in. I'm not interested at the moment whether you're baptized or in any meeting at all. Just for the moment, forget these things. Let me ask you in God's name, are you really happy? Now, are you? Does this Christ satisfy you? Does he? Or as I've said in other nights, have you felt at the end of the day, like saying, John, things are not, you know, what they used to be here? Have you felt like saying, Mary, you know, we're not nearly as happy as we were in the early days? Have you ever felt like saying, Father, I'm not happy. I'd like to be amongst the Lord's people and be a real Christian. Have you ever felt like saying these things? Ah, well, if something's accomplished tonight, brethren, it'll be grand, won't it? If tonight you can say, take the world, but give me Jesus. All its joys are but a name. Brethren, as long as Lot was in Sodom, he was telling everybody that Sodom was better than Canaan. Isn't that right? And every worldly Christian shouting to everybody the world's better than Christ. Oh, but in God's name, you don't believe that, do you? If you had challenged Lot, he would have said, no, Sodom's no better than Canaan. I wish to God I could get out of it. But he had a wife and a family to keep him there. See the danger of marrying away? Eh? I knew her. And early in her life, she married a businessman that wasn't the Lord's. Oh, it was all right at the start, and then, of course, that all finished, and she couldn't get to the meetings. Do you know, for more years than I care to think about, she bought the magazine. It was sent to her. If anything was near at hand that she could slip out on a very odd occasion, you would find her there. Latterly, she began to speak about coming back, and suddenly the Lord stepped in and took her home. Mind you, you know there's any amount of cases like that will break their hearts. Brethren and sisters, think hard, won't you? Make sure that you'll do all in your power, in your love to the Lord, to live for him, to find your company not with worldly and carnal Christians, but with those who are out of doubt and devoted to Christ. O worldly pomp and glory, your charms are spread in vain. I've heard a sweeter story. I found a truer gain. Shall we pray? Our Father, will it please thee to bless thy good word? Wilt thou write it large?